You're listening to the Rockford Symphony Orchestra podcast, where we look to inform about our upcoming events and give insight to behind-the-scenes happenings at the RSO.
This is Phil Davidson, and with me today is, of course, Rockford Symphony Orchestra music director Yaniv Attar, and we are discussing the upcoming Masterworks concert happening on Saturday, April 18th at 7:30 p.m. Where else but the Coronado Performing Arts Center. As always, great to see you, Yaniv.
Good to be here. Good to see you.
So could you give us kind of a description of what we're going to hear?
I think I wanted to capture the entire emotional journey of the concert. I mean, of course, the first piece is titled Fate Now Conquers, but I think each of the pieces in itself has that kind of journey of facing fate, uncertainty, struggle, and triumph at the end. So each piece has that element in itself, but I think also as an arc, you know, from the first piece and the second piece then to the Brahms Symphony at the end, it could all be looked at that kind of journey, which has been so much inspiration, maybe not inspiration, but driving force of composers to get from struggle to triumph. So I think all those pieces, each in its own, but also as an arch, has that kind of journey that the music will take us through.
Well, as you already said, the program very appropriately begins with Carlos Simon's Fate Now Conquers, which has been described as a work that predicts the unpredictable ways of fate. Go into that a little bit, would you?
Yeah, you know, it's a very, very short piece. I mean, it only lasts about 5 minutes long. Yeah, it's very short with incredible rhythmic drive from the very first note to the end. There's not many moments of pause. But I think what's so incredible about it, because it's not going to be in a musical language that is unfamiliar to us, but the unpredictability is everywhere. Whenever you hear certain harmony and certain rhythms, and then you think it's going to go one way because, you know, we have expectations in music from our ears and the way our brain analyzes things, and it totally shifts a corner to a different direction, which I guess it's a lot like fate. you know, it always takes you in a way that you don't think it will. And I think that unpredictability is the emotional engine of this piece, because it always takes you where you don't think it's, you don't expect, but eventually it gets to the triumph. It does get there in those 5 minutes, you know, and it's very fast paced. Your instinct's always like, oh, it's going to go this way, it's going to go that way, but then it goes where you don't expect. And that makes it very exciting.
I'm not totally familiar with Carlos Simon. So can you tell us something about him, and also how, I don't know how else to describe this, but how music listening limitations that he had actually helped the development of his style?
Carlos Simon is a young African-American composer. I think he lives in the Atlanta area, and I think he's became one of the most compelling voices in American music today. He grew up with not a lot of classical music around him. He mostly heard gospel music. And I think that kind of very melodic writing, very emotional writing, very exciting harmonic richness, and an incredible sense of rhythmic drive that he found in that music are all coming and shaping his own music identity now. And I think that's what makes him so appealing to young audience today. His music is, I'm not saying it's not intellectual, but there's something so deeply emotional about it that really grabs you from first listening. You know, you don't, and especially Fate Now Conquers, his piece, which I think it's one of the works that put him on the radar. Funny enough, that piece got a lot of attention during COVID, where there weren't, you know, many performances, and one of the recordings of orchestras that you you can find were made during COVID. I think it was with the National Symphony, and they were all sitting very far from each other, you know, 6 feet spaced. Mm-hmm. Those who could wear masks were wearing masks. Of course, the winds and brass couldn't wear masks, but the strings are wearing, you know, it's like, and it's this like 5 minute piece that, because of everything was online those days, he got a lot of exposure with that piece. And then people were starting to be interested in his music, and he's been commissioned a lot of works. And I'm really excited that we can perform his piece here in Rockford.
Yeah, it sounds very interesting. Well, I read that Fate Now Conquers draws inspiration from a journal entry by a famous name who I will not reveal. I will let you do that. So could you elaborate?
Yeah, so it's inspired, of course, by Beethoven, you know, with this very famous fate motif, ta-da-da-da. Beethoven, with him, it's all about fate. And I wrote the quote here. Beethoven famously wrote, "I will seize fate by the throat. It shall not wholly overcome me." Facing his struggle with deafness, his struggle with relationships. There was no shortage of struggles for Beethoven. And I think that line really captured Carla Simon's attention, which is why we also programmed Beethoven right after.
Right,
I think it's very appropriate. But also what Carla Simon did was what inspired him musically, besides the quote, was the second movement of Beethoven's Seventh Symphony, which has a rhythmic element with a very simple melodic motif at the end that is developed and to this from nothing to something huge and humongous. And I think that kind of harmonic development and structure really inspired him. So both the theme of fate with Beethoven and this specific movement from Beethoven's Seventh Symphony were the inspiration for this piece. So I think Beethoven is the inspiration for everybody because certainly for Brahms as well, which I'm sure we'll talk about later.
Yeah, right. Well, I think you already answered my next question about what we're going to hear, because I think we've kind of alluded to that. So let's move on to Beethoven's Piano Concerto No. 4, which would be next on the program. And I think a lot of people know this, but of course Beethoven did suffer from hearing loss. And I was reading about that, and I believe that it is thought that he composed many of his most admired works as that loss got worse. Is that not correct?
I think that's what's so incredible about Beethoven, because the more deaf he was, I think the more daring he was in his musical compositions. When you listen to his, you know, not so much maybe in his symphonies, but his late piano sonatas, and most importantly, his late string quartets. If you listen to them, even today, with all the contemporary music that we are used to hearing, the complexity and I have no other word to describe it, but craziness of this music, I'm just thinking, how on earth did he hear that in his head before putting it on paper?
Mm-hmm.
It's just so crazy, like the Big Fugue that he wrote. I mean, it's just insane that a person can like conceive this music while completely deaf.
Hmm. Yeah, it is amazing. Well, the Piano Concerto No. 4, the premiere of that piece, was, I believe, in 1808. And so who was the soloist? I think you can probably guess who that was. I believe during this premiere that the concerto was actually a bit overshadowed at the premiere. In fact, it was neglected for a while, was it not?
Yeah, so it's a very interesting concert. And actually, that concert is used as an example a lot for how the concept of concerts have changed during the years. Because that particular concert, you know, it's not like, you know, today people go to a concert, sometimes it's no intermission, just an hour long, sometimes it's intermission, it may be with intermission, an hour and a half, 2 hours max. I think this concert that we're talking about was a typical concert, which lasted maybe about 6 hours.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. I mean, you know, people didn't have TV. They didn't have radio. They had nothing else to do in the evening. And this particular concert, I think there was some solo piano at the beginning. There were two symphonies of Beethoven being performed, number 5 and number 6. There, Beethoven himself performed the concerto between those symphonies. And then at the end, Beethoven was improvising at the piano, which he loved doing. He was a very famous improviser at the piano. So, I mean, this was a whole evening. It was extremely cold that particular night. It was freezing in the hall. So the piano concerto was definitely shadowed between all these other works that were performed and I think neglected for years until it was, you know, brought to the surface.
Well, what is it? I think you know, I know the answer to this, but what is its stature now and what are some of the unique characteristics of it?
With every genre that he wrote, like I'm talking about piano concertos or symphonies, there's always one piece that is so different from the others. Mm-hmm. In the 9 symphonies, for example, number 6 is very different. It's the only one that doesn't have 4 movements. It has 5 movements. It has a program. The melodic material is very different. It's called the Pastoral Symphony, which actually connects to this program because of the Brahms. But anyway, out of the 5 piano concerto that Beethoven wrote, the 4th is also very, very different from all the others in its approach. I mean, even from the very beginning, every concerto that we know of the classical period starts with an orchestra introduction where they play the themes and then the piano comes in. And you know, it's usually after maybe a minute and a half, sometimes 2 minutes. Here, it starts very soft with a piano solo. Hmm. Introducing the theme, like a poet writing his first idea, and the orchestra answers softly. We still don't hear a theme. It's this almost like meditation in a way, even though it's not officially written that it's programmatic. A lot of people say that the second movement, which is very unusual, usually second movement is lyrical and has a theme and blah blah blah. This one doesn't. The second movement is very short. It's like a dialogue between the piano and the orchestra. And I think it's only the strings, actually, not the entire orchestra. And the metaphor that they give to that movement is Orpheus in the underworld going to save, how do you say it in English, Eurydice? I know that's how we say it in Hebrew. Anyway, yeah. And he's fighting the Furies, but he's doing it by playing an instrument. And here as well, it's almost the piano is so delicate and soft and beautiful in the response of almost hostile statements from the strings. It's this weird dialogue. It's the structure is like it's very, very different than any piano concerto that we know.
Well, I'm going to look forward to that.
That would be great.
Yeah, right. Well, then the final selection in the program is Brahms Symphony No. 2. I understand that Brahms was a bit of a perfectionist. How so?
To say the least, he destroyed many compositions because he thought they were terrible. And, you know, he felt very comfortable writing choral music. And I think he's one of the best choral writers. And this chamber music is fantastic. But for string quartets, and especially for symphonies, there was a lot of self-doubt. I mean, he didn't complete his first symphony until he was 40-something, which is, you know, almost late for a composer. But they always say that every composer wrote in the shadow of Beethoven, Brahms specifically, until... And some people actually call his first symphony Beethoven's 10th symphony. But yeah, I mean, it took him a while to feel confident and mature in his writing, but after he wrote his first symphony, you can feel he's feeling more sure of himself as a symphonic composer.
You answered my next question, so we'll move on. No, I was going to ask you that he did put off composing symphonies,
yeah,
and why was that? And you just
took him a while, but after he wrote his first, then the second came pretty quick. Then he felt more sure of himself. But you know, just like Beethoven with his, I mentioned his 6th symphony, or that was different from all the others, I feel the second also is a little different in the cycle of, unfortunately, he wrote only four. I wish he wrote more. Brahms is one of my favorite composers.
Well, okay, how would you describe the mood of this symphony? I mean, what can we expect?
I think it's a lot more melodic and cheerful than the other symphony. I mean, there's, of course, dramatic moments and stuff, but it's like a ray of sunshine. It's very, very much, I would say, inspired by nature and meditative. But it also had that journey, and I mean, and the finale is extremely triumphant. But I think it's the most optimistic, I would say, in terms of the four symphonies that he wrote. You know, the first symphony starts very tragic, goes to triumph. The third is, I think, the darkest of the four. Fourth is extremely intellectually complex. The second is just pure joy.
Hmm.
And I think that's how I would define this symphony.
Well, those different characteristics must be why I read a description. One part of it said it's cheery and pastoral, while another says it's quite melancholy. So that must be because of those different movements.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, there's this moment in the second movement where you can feel like this melancholy and drama. But he always managed to get out of it somehow.
So let's go back to Beethoven's piano concerto number 4. Would you tell us something about the soloist you're going to have?
Yeah, her name is Miriam Polsky, and she is a famous pianist and piano teacher. Actually, she teaches in upstate New York. I forget if it's in Cornell or Ithaca. One of those, I know her husband teaches in one, she in the other, is also a great pianist. Wonderful pianist, very expressive, technically virtuoso. I mean, she's really wonderful. I think she would be perfect for this piece. Actually, an interesting connection. I'm not going to say what the family relation is because I'm not sure. Maybe her uncle is a famous conductor, Victor Yampolsky, famous conductor in Illinois especially. For years, he was the head of conducting at Northwestern University. And I think Victor's wife, I'm not sure, again, of the relation, one of his family members used to play regularly violin at the Rockford Symphony.
Oh, wow.
So there's a family connection somehow, not just to Illinois, but to our orchestra as well. And I'm thrilled to have her come here and work with us in the orchestra on this beautiful concerto.
And as always, of course, we're going to have sound bites. So would you remind people what that's all about?
Yeah, Friday before the concert. So I guess that's the 17th of April at noon at Monotisi. You can come and hear a very informal conversation between the soloist and myself. We talk about life, about their career, about the music. They can purchase lunch if they want and enjoy a very nice, laid-back conversation.
Great. Well, I invite everybody to experience another great musical presentation by the Rockford Symphony Orchestra on Saturday, April 18th, 7:30 p.m. at the Coronado Performing Arts Center. And for more information about the concert and tickets and more, go to rockfordsymphony.com or call 815-965-0049. This is Phil Davidson.
I'm Yaniv Attar.
Thank you for listening.